Welcome to Sassy Reads for You with Annette Botko, a.k.a. Dolly's Daughter. Sassy takes you surfing through books and her own perspective on reality, a production of Cosmic Reality Radio.
Hello and welcome to Sassy Reads for You. I'm Annette Botko, also known as Sassy, and we are reading Nancy L. Hopkins' Cosmic Reality, Book 1, The John Kennedy Jesus Christ Connection. This will be aired for the first time on Wednesday, September 23rd, and we are on chapter? I think we finally switched chapters last week. So I think we're on 6. Of course I can't find it now that I'm looking for it. Jeez, this is a long chapter. So this is... I know they don't like silences during the recording, so I'm just going to keep babbling. This is Chapter 5, The Vatican Connection. The section is Evidence Review, and it's on page 109. And I'm just going to jump right in, because as you know by now, if you listen, that I just do that because I don't like to waste time. All right. Evidence Review. Even crazier was the whole concept of secret societies ruling the world, except that one of those secret societies, the Thule Society of Germany, had taken the world through the nightmare of World War II by way of the Nazi Party, and another secret society, the P2 of Italy, had nearly succeeded in taking over Italy during the 1970s. And the Freemasons had been successful in leading revolutions in America, France, and a dozen other nations. And in the United States, we would seem to have a number of secret organizations ranging from the Bohemian Club to the Freemasons, and my research indicated there were other groups even more powerful than those identified. The fact powerful men of politics, industry, finance, society, and the military could conspire to work within secret groups to control the world was something I could accept after reconsidering history and a seeming need for men to come together through some herding instinct. I just pictured a bunch of men trying to be herded by a bunch of women because that's how I roll too. Okay. Herding instinct. The prehistoric family grew into prehistoric tribes. The tribe eventually evolved into cultures where various tribes were bonded by common elements. Somewhere along the line, someone decided to unite common cultures under common government, and a nation was born. But being part of a nation is not enough. Within a nation, there is a tendency to still maintain separate group identities. Sometimes it is a geographic designation, such as New England, the Southern States, the Heartland, the West Coast. The groupings may take many forms, cultural, religious, political, and economic. Then you have the even more special and limited sorority and fraternities of the colleges and universities, as well as the Freemasons, the Rainbow Girls, the Demolay Society, the Knights of Columbus, the Boy Scouts, the Girl Scouts, the Campfire Girls, and others. While understanding groupings are a way of addressing the needs of many by lumping common goals together, the herding instinct goes beyond this. There is some innate need in men to come together with those who see the same limited reality. We have not nurtured the power of the individual. We have instead nurtured group power. but this may be a necessity based upon rules number 1 and number 2 of cosmic reality. We would certainly have a mess if every individual began believing in separate realities. If physical reality conforms to what the majority believes, any individual posing an alternate reality could threaten the very fiber of physical reality itself. We feel much safer and more secure with reality itself by joining together in groups and thus limiting exposure to alternate realities. And then there is that third rule concerning those in power, wanting to keep rules 1 and 2 from everyone else. It may be a natural, even desirable, tendency to empower the group to stabilize physical reality, but who controls what the group thinks? And that, right there, is my problem with all of these different realities, because if I can make reality what I want, everybody else should be able to make reality what they want, and they're all going to be different, and so what's the true reality? That's why I don't believe in all of these different realities, because there's so many people and nobody agrees on anything. Why would we agree on the same kind of reality? That's my problem with it, right there. Okay, chapter 6, Resurrection of Jesus Christ Connection. In the last chapter, traditional history was severely attacked. Your present position has shifted. If you believe you read history as it truly transpired, if you believe ancient knowledge that has been kept secret is now revealed, you will have the scepter of your own personal power within reach. We are now going to shift gears. Let us take another look at science, which is also maintained as secret knowledge. In war times, secrets are admired. The Philadelphia experiment of making a warship invisible was beyond top secret during World War II. In peace times, secrets should be viewed with suspicion. Only in the very recent past has more information been revealed about the Philadelphia experiment. Someone wanted to keep the knowledge gleaned on the USS Eldridge Destroyer Escort DE-173 in October 1943 hidden away from everyone else. The ship disappeared and sailors within it. As stated earlier, the Philadelphia experiment demonstrated the possible consequence incurred by individuals coming under attack by powerful electromagnetic fields. In addition to physical death and mental dysfunction, they could experience disruption of the molecular cohesion of the physical body, resulting in disappearance. Energy fields. Religious pictures depicting Jesus and other holy people surrounded by a bright halo is only one indication. There have always been individuals, whether called mystic, psychic, or guru, able to quote-unquote see auras that are energy fields present in all living things. Then, during World War II, two Russians perfected a technique for photographing auras. The Kurlian husband and wife team discovered auras can be captured on photographic film when a weak electric current is passed through a living object. Kurlian photography is based upon the phenomena of the, quote, corona discharge, unquote, getting its name from a similar visual effect of the sun's corona during an eclipse. On Earth, the effect is obtained by placing electrically grounded living objects in a high-frequency, low-amperage electric field. Millions of electrons build up around the grounded person and are discharged towards the electrode generating the field. By placing photographic film between the person and electrode, the spark patterns being discharged can be electrophotographed. The end result, under optimum conditions, are photographs displaying vivid color patterns of the aura. There's a picture on here. It's on page 112 for anybody who wants to see the picture. It is a Kirlian photography showing Friend's aura in the color original. The aura is a bright white outlined in layers of blue and purple. It's a black and white picture in here, though, so you can't see the colors. Different auras look different, and the aura of a given individual changes from time to time. It was even noticed that corona discharge patterns of human fingertips reveal diagnostic information concerning diseases in the body. Of great interest is how Kirlian photography of leaves with missing pieces show an intact corona image, the implication being a well-defined energy field still exists to interact with the high frequency of the electric field. The energy field remained when the physical part of the leaf was missing. Thanks to Kirlian photography, there is visual concrete proof as to the existence of the aura existing independent of physical manifestation. But what is the aura? Using one form of energy, electric in Kirlian photography, to enhance another form of energy is not new. It was experimentation with magnetic fields which allowed scientists to identify electric fields. Magnetism is still used to create the more versatile electricity. Existence of the bioelectromagnetic field cannot be disrupted. Not only can it be photographically detected through Kirlian techniques, the electric components can be measured as brain waves, electroencephalography. What the hell? Electroencephalograph. ELECTROENCEPHALOGRAPH. And we were doing so good until then. And muscular activity. The electromagnograph. That one makes sense. The muscular activity is electromagnograph. And the brain waves is that big, huge word. Electroencephalograph. Graph. Yeah, I'm not going to try it again. You guys can look it up. But is this measurable energy emitted by the body's physical molecules, or is the bioelectromagnetic field actually an entity unto itself? In other words, which came first, the physical body or the bioelectromagnetic field? If the bioelectromagnetic field came first, it would support belief in existence of the soul. Okay. Next section, quantum connection. For those having been brought up on a science before the 70s, it is difficult to imagine a scientific world that would claim, quote, there is no matter. Matter is simply a manifestation of energy in relationship to itself, unquote. But with the arrival of quantum physics, that is exactly what the scientific world has been forced to accept. When Einstein presented his theory of relativity to mankind, he ushered in a new era of physics. The new physics came to be called quantum physics, which was given the awesome task of proving or disproving the concept matter is energy in relation to itself. Einstein's essentially claimed that matter is a result of our perception of energy in relationship to ourselves. Quantum physics has, in fact, proven that there is no matter. Okay. But how is it that you can feel, see, taste something that does not exist? The answer lies in the concept of frozen energy. When you are running alongside another person, you can easily carry on a conversation because you are both running at the same speed. But if you were standing still and someone ran by you, not much can be said. In fact, if they could run fast enough, you would only see a blur. If they were running at the speed of light, you would see nothing at all. The only thing we have changed is the relationship of you to the runner and the runner's speed. The reason we perceive matter to be something solid is there is a similar energy between ourselves and those things comprising the physical universe. We are energy bodies operating within the frequency of the physical universe. Everything in our reality is vibrating at the same speed and is therefore perceived as being frozen in time and space. That almost made sense to me. And this is science-y. Okay. Quantum physics calls the physical universe the positive time-space continuum, where energy is moving at or below the speed of light. Theoretically, there could be energies operating beyond the speed of light and therefore invisible to the physical universe. This is referred to as the negative time-space continuum. I remember my absolute confusion when first confronting the new physics. What was discovered by experiments at the level of molecular and electrons? I remember my absolute confusion when first confronting the new physics. What was discovered by experiments at the level of molecules and electrons is that sometimes these nuclear particles are material, but sometimes they were observable as energy waves. The experiments also drew the conclusion that whatever scientists studied a situation, the very study skewed the results. The energies of the scientists were interacting with energies they were studying. Were interacting with the energies they were studying. So they were trying to study other energies, but their own energies were interacting with it. See, I got it. It takes me a little time sometimes, people, but sometimes I have flashes of brilliance. Implications are the atom makes some choice to be an atom. A molecule makes some choice to be a molecule of carbon instead of oxygen. An impregnated human cell decides to divide and divide until each cell makes a choice, like to become the heart rather than the kidney. It is easier for me to think of cells following a bioelectromagnetic blueprint projected by the consciousness of the soul than in terms of each cell having some conscious decision-making ability. In the Tao of physics, this quantum idea about energy was compared to Zen Buddhism and other Eastern mystic religions. The book's conclusion is, the ancients knew quantum physics by another name. Ancient knowledge. Ancient healers believed the human body is only one aspect of a multi-layered energy entity. The physical manifestation of the total multi-layered being exists within the positive time-space continuum. Other energy fields of the human lie in the negative time-space continuum and appear invisible to the physical universe because they operate at speeds in excess of the speed of light. Next session. Acupoints and meridians. According to Chinese physicians, some 5,000 years ago, nutritive energy known as qi brings life-giving nourishment or a subtle energetic nature through points on the skin to an internal system flowing throughout the physical body. These portals on the skin are called acupuncture points or acupoints. Each acupoint is the gateway for a pair of meridian circuits. One meridian circuit carries yang energy, believed as associated with creative and action. The other meridian carries yin energy, viewed as passive and stagnant in nature. Oscillations between these two opposites keep an individual balanced in an ever-changing universe. For every physical body organ, there is a pair of meridians controlling the very cells themselves. Meridians actually look like miniature duct-like tubular systems. Now, how do they know what it looks like? There must be a special camera for that, too. Professor Kim Bong Han of Korea isolated, identified, and traced meridians during the 1960s by injecting radioactive phosphorus into rabbit acupoints and following uptake of the substance into the rabbit's organs. Fluid extracted from the meridian's tubular structures revealed high concentrations of a number of hormonal substances, amino acids, DNA, RNA, and other biological elements, at levels far different than normally found in the bloodstream. Two things were apparent from Kim's work. The meridian system is closed and self-contained, and there is an interrelationship between meridians and other systems within the physical body. One amazing discovery made by Kim was that the meridian ducts in embryonic chicks were formed within 15 hours of conception, long before the most rudimentary organs. The meridians appear to bring information concerning actual development of the embryo to DNA control centers within individual cells. Now, acupoints themselves cannot be physically seen on the skin. They can, however, be traced by changes in electromagnetic fields within traditional acupoints. Electric resistance in skin overlaying acupoints is lower than surrounding skin by a factor of about 10 to 1. States such as sleep and hypnosis can cause significant changes in electrical conductivity. Sorry, the word split. I had to put it together. States such as sleep and hypnosis can cause significant changes in electrical conductivity of acupoints compared to their normal state in an awake person. Dr. Ion Dumitrescu, Dumitrescu, developed electronophotography, which utilizes a combination of Kirlian photographic concepts with computers and scanning electrodes. Acupoints can be seen to glow brightly along meridians associated with diseased organs. The size and brightness of the acupoints correlated to the disease's acuteness. Dr. Hiroshi Motoyama devised the apparatus for measuring the functions of the meridians and corresponding internal organs, or the AMI machine. The AMI is a computerized diagnostic machine which takes data from the acupoints, analyzes and interprets the information. When there is a marked electrical difference between paired meridians, the internal organ is in a state of unbalance. The VOLL, V-O-L-L, machine, developed by Dr. Reinhard VOLL, examines parameters of individual acupoints. By introducing electrical voltage to the acupoint, health of the meridian system is determined by its ability to hold the charge. What we are seeing is growing scientific proof for the existence of the acupuncture meridian system, well known to ancient healers, but only recently embraced by modern doctors. Chakra, natus system. There's a picture that shows down the body, like if you're sitting in the lotus position, it shows these little dots down the center of your body for which chakras are where. The crown chakra, brow chakra, throat chakra, heart chakra, solar plexus chakra, sacral chakra, and I think it says rest chakra. Oh, root chakra, sorry. Couldn't read that. Okay. Ancient healers also believe in another system, difficult to measure and to scientifically prove, called the Chakra Nadis system. Chakra is Sanskrit for wheels and are described as whirling vortices, V-O-R-T-I-C-E-S, of energy. While there are some 360 chakras identified within the physical body, primary emphasis is placed on seven major chakras, falling in a line from the crown of the head to the base of the spine. The chakras are seen as feeding fluid-like energy to the physical body. By way of 72,000 nadis channels, the nadis system is purported to be contained within the nervous system, which is the physical externalization of the nadis circuits, which are really threads of energy being emitted from the chakras. Etheric body. The combination of the meridian acupoint system and chakra nadis systems comprise the etheric body. It should be noted, metaphysicians since ancient times have said that etheric body exists, have described it, have stated its function, and it is probable the etheric body is the source of bioelectromagnetic energy, photographed as an aura within and surrounding the human body using Curlian techniques. Sorry, there's another little drawing that shows kind of the outline of a body, and it shows the etheric, astral, and mental lines, I guess, within the physical body, or it's just outside the physical body. I don't know. Let's read on and see. The etheric is the point of interface between physical cells of the body existing in positive time-space and energy bodies existing at speeds faster than light in negative time-space. According to metaphysical belief, the next field, called the astral, is the focus of our sensual appetites, desires, longings, moods, feelings, and fears. In other words, the astral body has a powerful connection with our basic survival and emotional natures. In a frequency range slightly higher than the astral is the mental body, which is an extension of our thoughts. The energy of thoughts takes form within our aura and affects the astral body in the form of emotions. Thus, what we think has a direct consequence on the astral body, which can in turn affect the etheric and physical bodies. What I am trying to demonstrate is the multi-layered aspects of the human life form. The thing we see as the physical body is only the energy field moving below the speed of light. Those energy bodies holding the emotions and thoughts are existing outside the speed of light, and the etheric body is a combination of the two, existing as a combination of frequencies where the meridian system moves slow enough to be seen within the physical universe. Beta, alpha, theta, and delta. Somewhere within these layers of energy fields are layers of consciousness. Within the physical body is the brain and seeming source of conscious thought. The conscious mind operates in a frequency designated beta frequency. It is the normal operating frequency of the awake individual. When the individual becomes deeply relaxed, asleep or in a state of meditation or creativity, alpha frequencies are detected. Alpha frequencies have been heavily studied and means developed to teach individuals how to consciously induce the alpha state. This training in inducing alpha states has been very successful and is called biofeedback. There are also delta and theta frequencies. Theta, T-H-E-T-A. It sounds like I'm saying theta with an F, but I'm not. By the 1970s, little was known about the delta state, but research into the theta state had begun. Biofeedback training had little success in inducing the theta state, except in one notable exception. Unlike others attempting theta training, one young man demonstrated an ability to access and consciously maintain the theta state. The difference between him and others would appear to have been his ingesting over 100 doses of the hallucinatory drug LSD. So you could only get to the theta state if you have a bunch of LSD. Is that what this is saying? What is the theta state? Did it say what the theta state was? I don't see that it tells us what the theta state is yet. Okay. I need a drink, sorry. Okay, this connection between the theta state and LSD takes on added dimensions when a psychic signal is displayed by an electroencephalograph. It's that same word I can't pronounce. Electroencephalograph, which registers brain waves. Not only does the electroencephalograph show psychic frequency operates within the theta range, but the particular pattern produced by the electroencephalograph during psychic states is virtually identical to theta waves being emitted by individuals under the influence of LSD. These two identical signals are also identical to the pattern produced when a person is in the deepest levels of sleep, where the associated rapid eye movement has given rise to the term REM sleep. Note, I am in no manner suggesting LSD be used to induce the psychic states. So don't do it and say that Nancy L. Hopkins told you you should. It is my personal belief the theta state is the operating frequency of the subconscious. Our subconscious, on the physical side, is the conscious level of those negative space-time continuum energies of the etheric, astral, and mental bodies. Our subconscious is the interface between our conscious minds and the conscious minds of our multi-layered energy bodies comprising our soul. Now, this semi-scientific discussion is just to provide something to think about in reading why I believe in the existence of a soul and the reality of reincarnation. Reincarnation connection. The U.S. Army Intelligence Center and School is located at Fort Huachuca, some 20 miles west of Tombstone, Arizona. On a trip out to Tombstone with two fellow female Army officers, I was in the front passenger seat looking down the road through the endless browns of the desert. The shimmering of heated air above the road was mesmerizing. My mind slipped into the relaxed meditative alpha state. I was jarred into beta reality when I heard myself say, "What the hell is the river doing there?" From the back seat, the voice of Ada Davis answered, "There was an earthquake and the riverbed moved about a mile and a half from its original position." "But," I asked, "what river?" "The San Pedro," Ada responded. "But I mean, what river? I do not see any river." "Over toward your right. where you can see the green line of vegetation, is the San Pedro River. But how did I know about a river moving when I didn't even see a river? I was totally confused. Ada leaned toward the front, looking at me, saying, "Maybe you lived here before in another life." I turned around and looked at her. "Reincarnation?" I asked. "Sure." I knew Ada was from Arkansas and a Native American. Her tribe used hallucinogens during religious ceremonies. Some of our fellow officers, when out on maneuvers in the desert, kept asking Ada which cactus was the peyote cactus. Ada continued, "My people believe in reincarnation, because you have never been there before. If you did live in Arizona in another life, that personality's familiarity with the area will make it easier for you to recall that other life." "Really?" I asked with interest, excitement, and some trepidation. "Just relax. When thoughts come to mind that seem to be coming from some place other than your own experiences, just let the thoughts flow. Don't be afraid and don't try to judge the images. Keep your mind out of it." With Ada walking beside me, that day in Tombstone changed me forever. As we walked through the town that had changed very little from the time of Wyatt Earp and his brothers Virgil and Morgan, the OK Corral was still standing as it had on October 26, 1881, when the Earps and Doc Holliday shot up the Clantons and the McLary boys. The Oriental Saloon was there, but much different. The courthouse was a museum. The third of our group did not believe in reincarnation. To keep from bothering her, Ada and I did not talk much about what I was experiencing. It was comforting to know Ada understood what was happening to me, as thoughts and images filled my head for minutes at a time. At one point, while walking down the wooden planks of the boardwalk lining the dirt street, I, quote-unquote, saw the shooting and said aloud, "He killed someone here." The unbeliever said, "Sure, you saw the sign." She pointed to the sign saying, Luke Short killed Charlie Smith. I was still staring at the dirt spot where Charlie Smith had died from a bullet. "I had shot into him when I was known as Luke Short," Ada said. "Great, now you know his name was Luke Short. Note, I need to point out that anyone Googling Luke Short will find out he did not die in Tombstone and lived to be an old man. But that is just one timeline. Another is the one I describe. Timelines will be discussed in Book 2. Okay, realities and timelines. They can all change. I had known from the beginning the thoughts drifting into and overpowering my mind had been from a man. He was arrogant and ignorant, and as I was realizing, got a sexual kick out of killing. But I was trying not to judge what was happening as Ada had directed. I kept trying to stay in a neutral place, allowing the memories from another mind to fill mine with information from a time 95 years in the past. The day had been long and the thoughts fleeting. It was a familiar feeling of knowing what was around the corner or expecting to see something or someone that was not there. It was really rather unnerving, especially with the killing of Charlie Smith. Late in the day, we were at the old courthouse that had been turned into a museum. There was a courtroom surrounded by a few small rooms holding displays of artifacts from the past, and there was a plexiglass display depicting the life of John Heath. The time was the same as the gunfight at the OK Corral. Heath had left the Tombstone area where he had grown up with the Clantons to go to Mexico. When he returned, Heath was riding with a gang of outlaws. One day, the Bisbee Bank was robbed. John Heath was arrested and tried for the robbery. He was found not guilty because of his alibi. The local townspeople decided the verdict was wrong. They lynched Heath from a telegraph pole. Ada found me transfixed by the images being behind the plexiglass. The words and picture of John Heath hanging from the pole by a rope around his neck had taken me back in time. Ada Davis had to virtually shake me back into the real world. When I finally noticed her, she had her hands on my shoulders and was asking, "Are you all right?" My mouth felt dry and my mind very tired. "Yes, I think so." "You were really out there. What do you remember?" What I had remembered was too weird to explain. We soon made our way back to the parked car. On the way out of town, we saw a small building with a sign, Boot Hill. We walked through the building and out the back where rock piles, wooden crosses, and tombstones marked graves of many who had died in the tombstone environs. All of a sudden, I felt this strangeness and looked at one marker. There was a name that was familiar. John Heath was buried right there. 2 weeks later, I returned to Tombstone with three other people. After walking around the small town, two went shopping and two went for a beer. While drinking the beer, I was sitting across from Robbie, a medically retired colonel in the United States Air Force. Oddly enough, Robbie walked Soviet KGB Colonel William Fisher across German Gleinic Bridge on February 10, 1962, to exchange him for a U-2 pilot, Francis Gary Powers, shot down while Lee Oswald was in Russia. Oh, good Lord. Okay. Robbie's wife had been my roommate during basic training, Army Women Officer School. The first time she showed me his picture, I felt I knew him. I was about to know from where. It was a dry, hot afternoon, and the first small beers went down real fast. Robbie suddenly said, with a serious note to his voice, "I apologize." "For what?" I asked. "It was an unfair gunfight." I knew what he was talking about. That's the thing. I knew he was talking about a moment in time when one man killed and one man died. A time before either Robbie or myself had been born. It was as if we were shot back through time because we were in the same place we had been the last time our paths crossed. I knew Luke Short had been a very bald man. No, very bad man, sorry. I knew Luke Short had been a very bad man. The Earps and Doc Holliday were his friends. He was their leader. John Heath had been a farmer who had seen his town taken over by some evil people. Heath thought that by killing the leader of this evil gang, he could rid Tombstone of the poison that had come in the form of gun-toting thugs. It happened in the Oriental Saloon. Luke was at the bar and drunk. Heath came in and called out Short's name. The drunk turned, and as he did, he dropped his gun hand. Heath drew his own gun and fired. The bullet ripped into Short's stomach. He was thrown off the bar stool. As he lay on his back looking at the ceiling, Luke Short was embarrassed. His bowels and bladder failed him before he took the last labored breath. Luke Short died embarrassed. I knew Heath had fled Tombstone with the Earps, threatening to kill him. I also knew the gunfight at the OK Corral had been the result. The Earps killed the farmer gang in vengeance for Heath's killing of Short. "What happened after you left Tombstone?" I asked Robbie/Heath. "Went down to Nogales and south, joined up with some others, and after a couple of years I came back. Those bastards robbed a bank and I got lynched from a telephone pole." It was a telegraph pole. Oh, I guess it was. "You ever been in Tombstone before?" "You mean in this lifetime?" We laughed. "Yes, this time around." "Nope, always wanted to, though." Does the name John Heath mean anything? Nope, should it? That was your name back then, I told Robbie the story about the plexiglass display. 6 years later, I went back to Fort Huachuca as an Army Reserve officer. During my 2 weeks there, three fellow officers and I rented a car and spent a Saturday in Tucson at the Tucson University Cowboy Museum. I had been looking at various paintings and artifacts and was getting bored. I walked out of one room and into a hall where one of my new friends said the strangest thing. You are missing it. Better go back into that room. It was the way he said what he said that made me turn quickly around and walk to the far side of the room I had just left. I sensed what I was missing was along the opposite wall. I walked over to the glass display holding a white-handled gun. Underneath it was a small piece of paper with the words, "Gun owned by John Heath." I was stunned. Slowly I took the camera and focused on the gun. I had taken two pictures when another friend came in saying, "We're getting ready to go, if it's all right with you. You okay?" After a moment I said, "You may not understand this, but I believe this gun killed me in a past life." He got really excited, saying, "I believe you. I belong to the Edgar Casey Foundation." I told him the story of John Heath and Luke Short and Robbie and me. The next day, we took the rental car and went back to Tombstone. We were in the courthouse museum. The plexiglass display had been updated, but it did not draw me back to into the trance experienced at my last visit. The Edgar Casey follower came over and said, "Come with me." I followed him to the small room where cowboys would leave their saddles while visiting the courthouse. He pointed to a table with a small plaque on it, Faro Table, where Luke Short was a dealer. There's more pictures. You can get the book and see the pictures too. "Sit down," my new friend demanded. "You owe it to yourself." He had left before I cautiously sat down and closed my eyes. I could smell the beer and dust and body odor. I could hear, though not distinctly, voices. How were my physical senses able to tune into smells and sounds? The ancients would say the memory of the soul had been tapped, but my experience went beyond just a remembrance from a past life. Only time was separating me from Luke Short. He and I sat at the same table, and time was just a relationship between place and space. Einstein's theory of relativity demonstrates time does not exist. No, time does not exit. What? Einstein's theory of relativity demonstrates time does not exit. I'm thinking that's supposed to be exist. Time is simply a relationship of place and space. Time is man's contrived measurement of his planet's daily travels through the universe. Time, as a separate reality, simply does not exist. It is only a measurement of the relationship of space and place. The Faro table acted as a focal point emitting a specific frequency. Everything in the physical world has its own peculiar energy field, whether alive or inanimate. Each place is a compilation of all things creating it. As Earth moves through the expanse of the universe, each infinite position has a different energy field. In Tombstone, at the table, with Luke and I being manifested by the same soul, there was a great vibrational similarity between the 1880s and the 1980s. There was only 100 years separating us, and in the timetable of the universe, that is not a very great difference. My ears and nose work with the vibrations of sound and electromagnetic stimulation from smells. At the moment I sat before the table, The vibratory similarity activated my senses. It was more than just a memory. Still got 10 minutes left. Cosmic rule number 7. Everything that exists is linked to everything that exists. I favor the image of existence being like a spider web. When a bug flies into the web vibrates and the spider feels the movement. Every single change of vibration on the web of existence is felt by everything that exists. If we accept physical cells are material representation of a series of bioelectromagnetic fields, we are providing circumstantial scientific evidence for the existence of a soul. A soul can be perceived of as the source of the bioelectromagnetic field, utilizing physical molecules to create a project, a human being. A soul can be perceived of as the source of bioelectromagnetic field, using physical molecules to create or project a human being. The first assumption being made is the evidence of a soul. A given soul experiences life by projecting various personalities within the earth or physical plane. Karma has been named the reason a particular life experience is required. Karma can be thought of as an eye for an eye. What a past personality did or did not do affects the next personality. In this way, progressive learning can be acquired. For example, a Nazi could be reborn a Jew to understand what it is like to be a Jew, or an alternative could entail being born into a personality who incurs a great deal of injustice, and that, you see, is the problem. It is the problem of the time continuum. For every specific lifetime, there will be many alternative future life experiences, which could fulfill the law of karma. To fully learn, a soul could project many personalities within the same time frame. The only requirement is to control space and place. If each personality is thought of as a specific space, then many personalities could simultaneously exist within the same time period or place. For example, suppose we have a room of strangers. If a soul can simultaneously project innumerable personalities, conceivably every individual in the room could be a projection from the same soul. One soul could project various bioelectromagnetic fields, reflected physically as different people occupying an identical place while being in separate spaces, that is, their own bodies. Yeah, I don't know about that. I am assuming the statement concerning man having been made in God's image refers to the soul. The soul cannot be limited by time, a simple measurement of place and space. It would be unfair of us to assume the soul cannot project many life experiences in the present or the past. Who are we to limit the definition of soul? If souls are beyond each human, how do we explain increasing numbers of humans? It seems to be stretching logic to think souls are continually being produced. However, if one specific soul can simultaneously project more than one human, Earth's massive population growth can be easily explained. Various individuals share the same soul. I don't know about that, Nancy. Cosmic rule number 8. There are a finite number of souls. If we assume the soul is projecting the bioelectromagnetic field, which is the body's blueprint, what happens when an individual's bioelectromagnetic field is suddenly disrupted or altered? Under mild attack, there would be a disruption of the normal electrical activity of the body and brain. As the disruption increases, the brain might undergo irreversible damage. If the attack were severe enough, the physical body's nervous system could be disrupted, causing physical death. Under the most severe attack, the molecular cohesion of the body could begin disintegrating, causing the individual to disappear. But what happens if there is an instantaneous breaking apart of the physical molecules under a catastrophic change in the bioelectromagnetic field? There have been innumerable examples of individuals who simply burst into pillars of flame. These may have been examples of what results if an individual's bioelectromagnetic field is suddenly and forcefully disrupted. Instead of a rather gradual loss of molecular cohesion, witnessed in the case of sailors after the Philadelphia experiment, the spontaneous breaking apart of the physical cells would result in an instantaneous energy release. While such a scenario brings forth thoughts of a potential psychic weapon machine, as in the situation with Vincent Collins, we may also have a key to understanding the resurrection of Jesus. And the resurrection of Jesus demonstrates existence of the soul. And I think I'm going to stop there because I've only got less than 5 minutes. The section we're going to start with next week is called Soul Connection. And I think we might just be able to finish this up next week. 140. We're on page 128. And there's only 149 pages. So I just need to get 20 pages done next week. I think I can do that. I think we did about that today. So thank you for joining me. I hope you are enjoying it. And if not, find something you do enjoy to do with this time. Thank you, Nancy, for allowing me to read your book. I hope you're still happy with asking me to do it. If not, don't ask me to read your books again. But it's interesting. Some parts I might believe, some parts I think are way out there, like the realities and the timelines all being different, and we can decide our own reality when everybody else can decide their own reality too. That just boggles my mind. I can't put that together. But that's it for today. This is Sassy signing off. Thanks again for joining me, and I will talk to you later. Bye.
You have been listening to Sassy Reads for You with Annette Bobko, a production of Cosmic Reality Radio. Radio player and archives can be found at cosmicreality.com.